Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the D-Raise Bay Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brett Rutherford, and joining me on this week's episode is D-Raise Bay senior writer and one of the co-hosts of Who's on Worst. He's a frequent guest on Raise Your Voice. He's Darby Robinson. Darby, what's going on?
Hello, Brett. I am doing well. I am in the Northwest and thinking of everybody down in the Tampa area that's listening to this that are about to face landfall of a big hurricane. So we're up here. We have a volcano that doesn't really erupt very often, but I've definitely lived through enough hurricane evacuations in my time in Florida that I know how that goes. So thinking of all my family that's still back there and all friends that are back there. So stay strong, everybody, with that.
Yes, definitely. And hopefully, you know, if you have power and you can watch the Rays game while you're home from canceled work or school or whatever else, and maybe, you know, listen to Raise Your Voice. But if not, yeah, definitely stay safe, evacuate if you've got evacuation orders, and we'll get through this together as Floridians, and Darby as a former Floridian. So Darby, we're getting closer to the end of the regular season. The Rays have not yet clinched a postseason spot, but it would take a minor miracle for them to not make the postseason at this point. With that being said, I've got to ask you, where are the vibes right now?
Pretty terrible. Pretty terrible, Brett. So September, coming into September or ending August into early September, the Rays rattled off about a 20-5 run. That was like pretty great. Like they started getting some people back, started to play good baseball, win some games they were supposed to win, and the vibes were starting to look good. And that was really important because they did what they needed to do there to set them up for a very killer September. We all had circled it. We saw the teams. It was the hardest September of any team in the postseason competition. And then you probably had like Baltimore and Toronto just behind them because all of the AL East played each other down the stretch, and everybody in the AL East is tough. Even the Red Sox, who had a pretty terrible year, still have Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers and some good pitchers. And like, they were a really good team last year with pretty much the same club. So basically everybody is good. Baltimore, who are bottom dwellers, are the team that is hunting for the postseason. Like, everybody in the AL East is good. Everybody has to play each other. And when the Rays aren't playing the AL East opponents, they're playing teams like the Houston Astros, who are the best team in the American League by far. So yeah, the vibes are tough because you come into this being like, you just need to go 500. And the Rays have been a worse than 500 in this like kind of brutal stretch. For the month, they've been floating right around 500. And so they're doing enough, but it just feels bad, right? They're doing just enough to survive, to tread water. Baltimore's not winning enough to gain enough ground, and their time is running out. But that's not a good vibe. It doesn't help that like the Mariners are also bottoming out and their vibes are terrible, because that just means like the Rays are stumbling into the postseason. And they're going to maybe even be in the wild card too, because the Mariners are stumbling in worse. Yeah. And then Baltimore is going to like slow down. Like, you want to go into September. You want to play meaningful baseball in September, but you also want it to mean something. You want to win games. You want to get Gatorade showers. You want to get like excited at the end. You want to clinch with like some wins, not basically waiting around after another loss to see if Baltimore lost. And they did. So like, okay, cool. Our magic number dropped one. We just blew another save. And now our magic number dropped one, but like, yay. And so while the Rays, like, again, the odds are all in the 99 or 98% range, you know, whatever site you look at, Fangraphs, Baseball Reference, Pacoda, like all of the, you know, Baseball Prospectus, I should say, like all of them are like at that high confidence interval, because after all of these losses, after all of this bad vibes, you still look at the standings and you're like, okay, you're up 3.5 over Baltimore, which is actually 4.5 with the tiebreaker. They got the tiebreaker against the Blue Jays. It's all there. It's all just enough, but you just want it to be a little bit more. And that's not there right now. And that's why the vibes are really bad.
real quick, not to pull us off of the vibes convo too much, but the tiebreaker has, I think it's my least favorite part of the new playoff format. We talked about the new playoff format and how we liked 10 better, but you know, expansion was inevitable. 12 is better than 14. We'll take 12. But the elimination of game 163, where it's like, you're looking at the standings, like you said, the 1 point Orioles 3.5 back, but they actually have to, you know, just eclipse the Rays. They got to, you know, pass, you know, fully pass them. I don't know. I just, it's a weird part of, it's not how baseball was ever really played. You would always know, like, all we got to do is catch up, right? Just, we get one more shot. If we catch them, now it's like, you got to fully pass them. You don't have the tiebreaker. I have to like try to track during the season what the season series is at. I don't know. Don't love it. But what I will say about the vibes and the Rays, like you look at the last four seasons, right? 2018 projected to finish last place by almost every website, outlet, writer, for whatever reason, some valid, some invalid reasons why they thought the Rays would stink in 2018, but you win 90 games. And for a while in September, you danced with the idea of the postseason, but I think most Rays fans weren't heartbroken when that didn't come to fruition. I think you were just very happy with 90 wins. 2019, obviously you do power into one of those wild cards. You beat the A's in the wild card game. Like, the vibes were great there. You had a young team, a young core, guys like Willy Adames really taking center stage, becoming franchise players for the Rays. 2020, we're just happy to have a season. You have the best record in the American League. You win the pennant. 2021, even though you had the division, you know, pretty much locked up for a good chunk of the season, you were chasing 100 wins. And they got to 100 wins. You're expecting another great postseason. But the September vibes were different. Like, you were always chasing something. There was always something to look forward to. And I know the Rays danced with the idea of overtaking the Yankees in the AL East as early as a couple weeks ago, but you really needed a lot of things to go right, including, you know, a sweep of the Yankees in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And when that didn't happen, I never felt like the jeopardy, like the, ooh, we might not make it. This is exciting. Like, it, you know, mm-hmm. something to, what, the suspense, right? I have never felt that. I've never thought like, oh, Baltimore is just going to blow us right by. But I also haven't felt the excitement of like, man, I really hope we finish in the first wild card. I know I want the home games. Don't get me wrong. I want the home games. But like, I turn on the games every night, but it's not something I'm like super excited for. I'm like, another regular season game to get through tonight. Hopefully everybody stays healthy.
I think that that's maybe a big section of that, right, is the health. It's like each game is just waiting to see who like has to like call to the trainer. And so you're like, I just don't want to like, I want to just skip all the games. We just like, you know, postpone these last nine and then have Baltimore lose about five out of their remaining 10. And then they clinch the postseason. They don't even have to win a game. You know, just stay at like whatever, 84 wins or whatever. And that way you're like wrapped in cellophane and you're like healthy. I think one of the things that September really, and here's the thing, we're talking as fans right now. And I have a hard time of even like taking off my analyst cap for this. And just like, it's all just like pure unadulterated fandom. The games have been really miserable because like, they're all close, but like, I think you're right. Like they really haven't meant anything. They mean something because you're counting down and the clinching will be fun, but it's also like, yes, you beat Toronto, you get to host at home, which would be greatly helpful. But also like, it's still like you're in. It's not the threat of like win or die. It's really like win in position, but really getting healthy is more important. And like lining up your pitching is more important. It's less important to actually succeed. So when I think of it from a fan perspective, I'd like to see some wins because I'd like to just see like the team play well, shore up some things and like get some wins. End like this last road trip like on a high, like maybe a winning road trip, like 6-3, something like that would be like really exciting, just to like win out to the end of the regular season, you know, not just like fall to the wild card three slot, even if it is maybe more advantageous like strategically. You just don't want to just be like getting enough and then just like sailing into the harbor. However, from a team perspective, I don't know, like maybe the vibes are fine and they're just like trying to like get through games and when they clinch, they'll still be happy. And like the champagne will taste sweet. And then the postseason, it's a totally different animal. I don't know.
I mean,
like, I don't know.
Are the vibes great though in the clubhouse when he's batting right now, Yandy Diaz, as I watch Tuesday's game live. He didn't start, so he must be coming off the bench, but yeah, him and Randy Rosarena in a reported dust up. Now, I don't want to get into the details of like what could have caused it, or, you know, they say they're fine now. They're both in tonight's game, but it does feel like the vibes might not be as good this year as they have been in years past. Like, for example, I stopped wearing my not interesting nor charismatic Rays t-shirt because it doesn't feel like a joke anymore. Like, it doesn't feel ironic. It just feels like that's who they are this year. And so I would always get people asking me like what the shirt meant in the past, but I could explain to them like, oh, it's kind of like a joke. The team wears it and, you know, they enjoy it. But this year it feels like we're just not really super interesting nor charismatic.
There's really exciting players, but like it does feel like a very, it's been a grind, you know, all year. A lot of injuries, a lot of 500 baseball. I mean, most of the months have been about 500. They've been a little bit above, a little bit below. It's been basically a 500 club with a 20-5 run.
Yeah.
And that's all you need in a regular season. If you did that and you were 500 every single month, but one month you were 20-5, that's a 100 win team. So yeah, that's good, but it doesn't feel good because you'd rather have like win streaks and lose streaks. Honestly, what's really funny is like looking at the team, the biggest losing streak is still four games. They've not lost five in a row, but it feels like losing three, winning a game, losing three,
scoring no runs, losing four,
then winning like four gets you right around 500 again, but it feels terrible. It feels terrible,
and part of that is because they're not as well. Obviously, this goes without saying, they're not as good as last year's team. But last year's team, for really the first time in franchise history, the Rays are always going to have elite pitching. Most years, they're going to have really great defense. But last year, they were a truly elite, if not the best, offensive team in baseball. And you go out and you bring in a guy like Nelson Cruz, and we can talk about his struggles with the Rays, but still an exciting name that really made you look at the lineup card a little differently. You had Brandon Lau in there. You had Austin Meadows in there, who was a proven major league hitter. It was a more exciting team to watch. And part of that's because of the injuries this year, but you look at the lineup card and you're like, oh, I hope he can produce in this spot tonight. Or, ooh, I'm not sure about him batting sixth in this lineup that led second American League in runs last year. So I think, obviously, guys that left, your Joey Wendells, your Austin Meadows, but also guys that are hurt. Mike Zanino, who had a career year last year. Brandon Lau, Kevin Kiermaier. Brett Phillips isn't around anymore. Like, it shouldn't be a surprise that the vibes maybe feel a little different when you don't have a guy like Brett Phillips in the clubhouse and in the dugout and been playing in games most nights.
The biggest thing has been the injuries. I mean, you still have taken away, for the vast majority of the season, Brandon Lau and Wander Franco, who are the two best position players on the team. So, like, again, you take away two of the best position players, you're going to have a worse team. That's not.
You've got rookies to replace him, Taylor Walls, Vidal Brujan. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to go through those tough stretches.
It's going to be tough. And, like, I think one of the biggest kind of frustration points this year was not only do you lose those guys, you lose Mike Zunino, who was 30 home runs last year. And even if he doesn't produce that, you still kind of would like to have like that threat of like a 15 to 20 home run pop from the catcher. And they've gotten good production from their catchers and good defense too, but it's still, it's different, right? And the offense is different. This is an offense. And for a long time, people have really kind of clamored for an offense kind of like this, which is a lot of contact, lot of balls in play, that type of thing. They still strike out quite a bit, but they're more contact based. They're, you know, base to base team, but the base running has been inconsistent. They lead the league in outs on the bases, but they also still produce enough runs through base running that it's more in the mediocre range than a awful.
It's still not where we want. Like, the Rays were great base running last year. It's still gotten worse.
Yeah, exactly. So they've been worse at base running. They're not awful at base running, but they are definitely giving away more runs than they should. And then they have not been able to produce as much runs as they should through that, or as they have in the past. The walks, the on-base percentage has been bottom like 10 or so. Slugging and power has completely dried up. You know, you don't have Austin Meadows, who did not have much power this year either. He was injured and for most of the season, had a really rough year. But you don't have Mike Zunino, you don't have Brandon Lau, you don't have power. Like, there's no, and I think a lot of times with the amazing pitching that the Rays have had, which has been a bright spot, you kind of need to sometimes like luck into a bloop and a blast to win a game. And I think right now the Rays need about 3 to 4 good events per inning to generate runs. And the biggest issue is it's things like the pitching staff or the bullpen have now become real sources of frustration because of the fact that they can't hold like 2-1 leads or 3-2 leads. But in a way, like every bullpen, you know, every reliever is going to have like a random home run here and there. Like they're going to have like a bad inning. But the fact is now any bad inning, and it's like, that's the one chance to win this week. Like you needed that good inning. Like you needed to hold, like, yes, it's a very close game. You
spend all your allowance in one day.
Like that's too much. Like, yeah, you have to be perfect every time out. Like if Shane McClanahan gives up 4 runs, like you're okay, whatever. You're toast.
That's a series sweep right there.
There's nothing you can do. So like those are the problems right now, is that like even the good pitching, like a Brooks Raley giving up a 3-run bomb, right? He's been fairly flawless, very few home runs given up, but he's given up 3 big home runs and 3 big bad performances that blew a save against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, blew a game against Houston, and then blew a game against Toronto. That's it. That's pretty much the only bad things he's done this year on the field. but like, this is the 3 things that like, that still counts. Like those are 3 big games. And like, if anybody makes a mistake, there's nobody to like pick them up. There's no like offense to be like score a couple runs after a blown. And that's been where the vibes have been tough, is like without the home runs, without the power, without the ability to just kind of like get a cheap two run inning to like maybe get back the cheap home run that was given up. It's really tough because it feels like everybody has to be perfect. If you give up a home run as a pitcher, as a reliever late, that's it. You're not getting that run back. This game is over. It's a tough thing. You just need some of those games to kind of like switch up to like kind of get that feeling. And that hasn't really been September. And for the most part, it hasn't really been this year.
No, it's you had a few players last year with some career seasons. Mike Zunino, Brett Phillips had 13 home runs. Joey Wendell, I mean, just continued to be a really good everyday player. You know, when he can stay healthy, he is every bit an everyday third baseman in the big leagues. This year there's been a lot more experimentation, moving guys around. Your constants have been Randy Arozarena and Yandy Diaz, the two guys we just talked about. Jimon Choi has completely disappeared and starting to get back on the right track, but it wouldn't shock me if we've seen the best days of Jimon Choi's career, and it's not going to get any better from here. The bullpen, while I'm still super confident, you're still missing Andrew Kittredge, who was your best reliever last year. You're still missing JP Feiereisen, who now is going to be a big league record holder for most innings in a season without giving up a run with his like 22 innings. But still, obviously, an incredible reliever, a guy they did a lot of work with when they got him in the Willy Adames trade. Both of those guys are gone. You've got Pete Fairbanks, you've got Brooks Raley, where, and going back to the Brooks Raley thing that you mentioned, it feels like it's probably just been some bad luck. But remember early on in the season, he had a lot more low leverage usage, like Kevin Cash would bring him in the fifth or the sixth, and we had like a healthy lead, and we're like, didn't we pay like $10 million to sign this guy? And he was just, you know, coming out and, you know, getting 2 outs in the fifth. It felt like he really did well in those low leverage situations. And like you said, though, those 3 home runs he's given up have all felt like they've been bone crushing, no chance of winning this game home runs. So I hope that trend doesn't carry into the postseason. I hope it's just some small sample size stuff. Because I do like Brooks Raley as a pitcher, and we now know he's going to be able to pitch in whatever postseason series the Rays get. Sounds like Canada is going to be lifting their vaccine regulations or some of their vaccine regulations at the end of September. But yeah, I think the vibes could get better when a certain someone makes his debut the day this will come out on Wednesday, makes his 2022 debut. We'll talk about him right after this quick break. And we're back on Raise Your Voice. We spent the whole first segment of the show talking about how bad the vibes were right now, even though the Rays, have a shot to win 90 games for another straight season and are headed to the postseason. On top of all that, they're getting who was maybe a top three pitcher in baseball when he went down last year. Tyler Glasnow's coming back, making his debut the day this is dropping on Wednesday. Not really sure how stretched out he's planned to get. We know he was throwing kind of two innings at a time in Durham, and the plan at the big league level, TBD. I'm sure the Rays have a better idea of it than we do, but they also might be playing it by ear. But Darby, first off, how exciting is it to get Tyler Glasnow back?
Oh, I mean, it's incredibly exciting. I think last year there was, we all kind of were trying to break out the calendars and look and be like, okay, maybe he could come back in September, end of September, which is kind of pushing it for Tommy John surgery, because you also need, with pitchers, you need a ramp up. It's not just get healthy by like the end of September. It's, you need to get healthy by August to be able to then start throwing a baseball and then get, your arm built up, because the Rays were never going to just throw him out there and let him build up in the majors. That's obviously a dumb thing to do. And the Rays are one of the best teams at rehabbing arms. Like, everybody that has come through the system, that has come through their kind of rehab programs, have always praised their professionalism and their ability of like kind of keeping people on track and really prioritizing that health as they kind of work their way back, not rushing things, really taking their time. So they weren't going to do that. Tyler Glasnow wasn't going to do that either. He's smart. He knows that like he has a very bright future ahead of him, and Tommy John surgery is definitely not the end as it used to be. It's gotten better and better and better as the years have gone on, as medical advancements have happened. So you kind of were hoping last year that you'd get to this point, but now seeing him do his rehab starts in Durham, getting those like highlights, seeing the velocity be Tyler Glasnow velocity, upper 90s, sitting mid to upper 90s. That's what you want to see. You're seeing the sharp break on that curveball, that unbelievable elite curveball. So you're like, okay, this guy can be coming back, and you get the extension with him signing that extension. That's an exciting thing. So him coming back and knowing that it's not like maybe the last two like appearances or three appearances of Tyler Glasnow, but like this is basically, he's coming back for a taste to try to help out this team that's trying to make the postseason and try to make a run. But really, it's like, let's kick some rust off and be ready to be a potential Cy Young candidate next year. Be the ace, be one of the top five pitchers in baseball. Like, that's the goal. That's the expectations. That's the bar. So that's what's exciting. It's like, tomorrow is a step on the way. He's not going to go a complete game. He's not going to throw a perfect game. But whatever, however long he's in there, if it's like three ups or four ups, if it's going to be three innings, four innings, we're going to see. But basically, it's just going to be nice to see him throw competitive pitches again, back in the majors, and whatever role, whatever length he can give, every inning he's in there, he's probably the best pitcher the Rays can throw out there. It's him, it's Shane McClanahan in terms of best stuff. Before his injury, it was Tyler Glasnow, though. Like, he it's basically him, DeGrom. Like, there's
I still put Garrett Cole in that tier.
Cole. Like, there's like a very small short list of pitchers with the stuff that Tyler Glasnow has. And that's a very elite list.
I really think that's the top.
Scherzer and Verlander when in their heyday, in their prime. I'm not sure at this age they're quite there. They're still great. But prime Verlander, prime Scherzer, that's that level. So maybe Ohtani as well. Like, it's a pretty short list. So that's what's exciting with Tyler Glasnow, is when he is healthy and on, there's very few in baseball that has quite the elite level stuff that he does.
Yeah, I agree. And we know he's going to be starting on Wednesday. I don't imagine him coming out of the bullpen in the regular season. Once we get to the postseason, though, I mean, he will start games, but we've also seen him pitch on short rest in the ALDS in 2020. He only threw two innings, but again, similar situation as to what he's going to be taking on here. And the Rays, masters of blurring the lines between starting pitchers and relief pitchers. It's like you said, okay, Tyler Glasnow, Shane McClanahan, they have the best stuff in the Rays staff. The next guy is probably Pete Fairbanks. And you're not just looking at these guys as, okay, we need Glasnow to get us five so we can turn it over to the bullpen. You don't need that. You've got a lot of really good outgetters, so much so to the point where, Corey Kluber, I don't really want to see him in the postseason rotation. But you might get to a situation where Jeffrey Springs' role changes into a multi-inning reliever. And what a great guy to have out of your bullpen. We've seen how effective he is as a starter. So to have Glasnow, even if he's not seven-plus inning Glasnow, which he has never really been in his career. I mean, he was last year, and then he got hurt. So I don't know what his career looks like moving forward. But just having him for one, two innings, maybe three innings in a postseason game adds so much depth to your bullpen. In a backwards way, it gives you so many more options because you can go to a three-game series, McClanahan, Glasnow, Rasmussen, in that order, mix it up, figure out what you want to do with the rest of the arms. That just adds a level of confidence that wasn't there a week ago for me in this Rays team.
Well, and we've seen, like you mentioned, the game seven against the Yankees. Game five against the Yankees. You saw in an elimination game how dangerous and how good like a two inning Glasnow could be. You get two innings, suddenly that's the first crack of Judge and Stanton. Mm-hmm. Right now they have maybe three more at bats. You've already eliminated one. Maybe they gets around to him and he gets them twice. Now you have two more at bats to worry about with those two elite hitters. You kind of start, and like you said, the Rays look at this game as 27 outs, not six innings from the starter, and then here's your middle reliever, and then here's your setup guy in the eighth, and then here's your closer in the ninth. It's 27 outs. There's going to be some outs that are more important than others. Those don't necessarily come in the exact innings that you can decide beforehand, and you have to use your best to face the best to get those outs. Mm-hmm. However you get those 27 outs, that's the key. So Tyler Glasnow can shorten how many outs people that are not as good as Tyler Glasnow need to get. And in a short series, that's dangerous. I think everybody, when we look at like these postseason matchups, it is kind of funny when we think about, I think as Rays fans, sometimes you look at other teams like, oh, I don't want to face them because they have these guys. You don't want to face them because they have these guys. Everybody else is doing the same thing with the Rays. Like, no, like you said, Shane McClanahan, Tyler Glasnow, and Drew Rasmussen, with like a potential Jeffrey Springs and Pete Fairbanks and Jason Adam mixed in to like get those out. They're like, okay, where's the guys that we can get runs off of in that? Okay, maybe there's like an inning here, an inning there. There's like a fourth inning, a sixth inning, and an eighth inning in three games that you have to get your runs on. That's what other people are looking at this team's pitching like. And so I think it's sometimes a better perspective to like take a step back and be like, oh yeah, Tyler Glasnow coming back. That's like, well, you may not want to face Robbie Ray and Luis Castillo in a first round matchup against Seattle. They really don't want to face Shane McClanahan and Tyler Glasnow in a first game series when you just need two wins and then you move on.
Do you remember the four pitchers who threw in game five of the ALDS against the Yankees and in how many innings they threw in what order?
Okay. Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah.
Two innings or one and two thirds? Two innings.
He went two and a third. He faced nine batters.
God, he went to the next one. So we'll then he went to Nick Anderson.
Yes.
Nick Anderson. And he went like two.
Two and two thirds, faced another nine batters, turned the lineup over a second time.
Man, Anderson's arm. You could just, I could hear the tendons slowly tearing at each of those innings.
It got us that series win, which
it got through Anderson, Houston.
I'll trade the rest of your career for that New York series win. I'm sorry.
Houston, terrible. He was also solid. He was also solid in Houston. Honestly, though, a lot of players, I feel like this is your moment. How many moments do you get? Nothing is for granted.
Which Everything goes into the idea of like, okay, maybe Nick Anderson hid stuff from the team and maybe shouldn't have been pitching. But you get in that moment, like you work your entire career to go on a run like this.
Yeah. And those moments live forever. After Nick Anderson, it was
the moment Diego. Of Nick Anderson blowing the lead in game six of the World Series will live forever.
Sadly. But Diego Castillo next. Two innings.
Pete Fairbanks actually came in.
Oh, I'm Pete. Okay. Oh, that's right. No, yeah. Of course. So Pete Fairbanks after that, then Diego. Two, four. Yeah. To finish.
So Glasnow faced 9 batters. Anderson faced 9 batters. Fairbanks faced 8 batters. And Castillo faced 7 batters. And like, to me, that was like, in a situation where you have to use a pitcher on short rest, like textbook managing in an elimination game. You're not going to let one guy get comfortable and come up and face a Nick Anderson a second time where they can square up a fastball. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to let it happen because now we've got Pete Fairbanks, slightly different arm angle, a little bit more velo on the fastball, just a different look. Then you go to Diego Castillo, really hard slider, like really mixing things up. And I think the Rays have the arms to do that again this postseason.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, like those are all guys that throw very fast with really sharp breaking balls, but they are all different. They are all incredibly different shapes. And we all remember the horrific arm clock from Fox that year. But it's true. I mean, like Pete Fairbanks is coming directly over the top and with maybe the best hard breaking ball in baseball, like potentially. Like it is so good. And that's including Tyler Glasnow's curve, which is one of the best in baseball. And Nick Anderson's curve at that time, which was truly elite. And Diego Castillo, when this slider was on, which sometimes it wasn't, but on that day, it definitely was. Is incredibly tough. And coming from a more of a kind of a side arm almost, not a full submarine, but like a not over the top, like Pete Fairbanks. So putting those guys back to back, what an unfair and difficult angle. Yeah, that's the type of thing though that the Rays still can do, and it's very with the bad vibes. We are kind of forget about the pitching sometimes, that the pitching has put the game every game has been in these close games because of the pitching.
Yeah, still very much elite pitching staff. You get Glasnow back again. I mean, I think there's going to be a game if the Rays go deep, if they get to at least the ALCS, there's going to have to be a game where you get 6 innings out of Glasnow. Like that feels like something that's going to happen. We're all going to be on pins and needles watching it. It feels like that's something that might need to happen to get into a tight series with a Houston. Again, we're still not sure how the bracket is going to line up, but I mean, yeah, Glasnow, McClanahan, maybe second best 1-2 punch in the postseason. Behind, obviously, New York's DeGrom, Scherzer. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're right up there. I mean, maybe the Dodgers, Julio Urias, and pick your poison, Clayton Kershaw, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't feel like that tops like a McClanahan-Glasnow duo.
What's the Yankees? Cole and Nestor?
Cortez. Yeah. I'm taking McClanahan and Glasnow.
Nestor's been good, but like you're always kind of like the stuff isn't quite there. Like,
Toronto's got Gausman and Manoah. Manoah's got great stuff.
Could be there. That's an interesting. Gausman and Manoah is a really interesting one because Glasnow's better than Gausman, but Gausman's very, very tough. Manoah is really good. I think him and Shane McClanahan are very similar. Both also are have reached and surpassed their innings cap.
Yes.
So like they are both in the like, and both have the stuff has been a little less down in September. Like Manoah, the velocity is down. The break is down, and both have shown really good starts because they're great. So even with worse stuff, they're like still better than 95% of all pitchers in the game. But that's the thing. That's what you're looking at. Two young guys. It's like, okay, how much can they go? Which then gets you to Seattle with Robbie Ray and Luis Castillo, a little bit older guys, more vets who the innings limits are fine.
And then the Astros, who are just better than everyone else by like a lot.
That, and what's great with the Astros is like you look at their pitching and you're like, okay, who's their top two starters? And you can be like, well, Framber, but then like, oh, Lance McCullers is pretty good. And then you're like, oh, Christian Javier has been really good. Maybe he's this top starter. Maybe it's Luis Garcia and his wine.
Well, and plus Verlander.
They're just, and Verlander gets obviously game one, game three, game five, game seven. Like he gets all of those. And he's the ageless wonder. The problem with the Astros is like all of those pitchers, again, we're talking about outgetting. Just pick five. You know, you put Verlander, that's your two, you know, that's in the short series that they're not going to face. You get him twice. So game one, game five, potentially. Now you still have all of these other arms to get through. Yeah. Houston. Maybe somebody like eliminates them.
Would you trade, considering the health of everyone? Like if they're hurt, they're hurt. Would you trade pitching staffs right now with Houston? Just straight up trade.
So health involved.
Yes. Josh James is their only hurt pitcher, by the way, which that's really maddening to look at their IL, and it's three players and they're all 30 or above. It's like none of their young guys are hurt. The guys are hurt are Jason Castro and Michael Brantley, who you'd expect to be injured.
Yeah, Josh Jason James. Castro, who's their like fourth best catcher. Yeah, wow. Sometimes you just got to be healthy. Like that's better than anything else. It's just health. That's a really tough question. Is it for like 1 year?
It's for the postseason this year.
Oh man, bullpen included or just rotation?
Yes, and I'll include this. The trade happens tomorrow, so this weekend series between the teams, you get to preview what it'd be like to face the other pitching staff.
Oh, man. Honestly, that's a really tough question because I don't know if anybody like says no or yes, like whoever's offering. I might, because of the age, I might, if I'm going to the postseason, I probably go with the Astros because they have a bit more experience. You have Verlander. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. Glasnow would be really tough to lose.
And I'll say it, knock on wood, like Shane McClanahan, well over his innings limit, just had a pretty big scare. It turned out to be nothing, but
right.
He could be a ticking time bomb. I hate to say that, but
I look at also the bullpen. I think the Rays bullpen is better, but the Astros bullpen isn't bad. But Christian Javier and Framber with Verlander, and then using Luis Castillo or Luis Garcia, similar to like a Springs. I think I go with. They don't have they got rid of Odorizzi, right? I don't want like just the danger of him being anywhere near. Okay, good.
That's like a
it sinks the whole trade.
It's a non-starter. Like. You guys can
I have to use Odorizzi for at least three innings in one game. No, that's the poison pill of the contract. I think Verlander is the biggest thing, right? He's been a workhorse. He stays healthy and he's pitched a ton in October. So if in that regard, but that's closer than it's closer than I think people might think.
I felt like, even though I think the Rays beat him, I felt like I've never seen Framber Valdez lose a game. Like, I just think he goes out there. Like,
he's really good.
Based on my memory alone, he has never lost a bit. He just goes out there, seven innings, four strikeouts, and two walks, and the Astros win 5-0.
I'm trying to remember the Astros series.
I remember Yandy drawing the walk
2 years ago,
yelling at Framber, like trash talking that he drew a walk, which was my favorite Yandy moment forever and ever.
It's a perfect Yandy moment. Yeah,
I mean, like that beats the two home run all wild card game for me. Like, just drawing a walk and then drawing at Framber Valdez of all people.
Where is the walk derby for the next year's All Star game? And you have Juan Soto and Yandy in the final round. Eliminating Max Muncy and who's another great walker?
A good walk drawer. I feel like now I got to look it up. But anyways, yeah, I mean, Yandy, yeah, that's peak for me. I don't know. I would trade it. I think I would do it in a heartbeat. But I might be wrong. Maybe the Rays are better.
I think they're both really well managed, but I would take Kevin Cash with, I would take Kevin Cash managing the pitching over Dusty managing the pitching. So whichever one I get, I keep Cash. Yeah.
Yeah. You keep your coaching staff. Yeah. Okay. I mean, like you said, I think you're fine with either one. It would be interesting to see, you know, if the Rays are lucky enough to get to play the Astros at some point.
I think in terms of depth, this is where that's an interesting question, is I don't hesitate with any other pitching staff in the American League.
You would just say no automatically?
Yeah, I would keep the Rays. And that's no disrespect to any of those teams, but I think the Blue Jays, obviously, they are very top heavy, but very thin beyond that. The Yankees are as well.
I would have made the trade in June, maybe, with the Yankees.
Maybe. But I there's still like some parts of me that I'm like, do I fully believe Nestor is real? Do I think Severino's arm stays healthy? Do I think I don't like Domingo Germán at all? So like, I don't, you know, do I think Tyone stays healthy? Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like Cole is great, but again, it's like, I don't know how much. I like Cole, I like Nestor, the rest.
Nestor's going to get lit up in the playoffs, I think. Like, he's going to have a game where he drops a goose egg. It might be like against like a Toronto, like a right-handed heavy.
That's true. Yeah.
Toronto.
That'd be a tough match. It's interesting, though. I feel like we just need to skip through September, get to the seeding, and then just start being like, okay, new season. It's a new season. It's a new tournament. And just start talking about that. Because I'm like, already stopped like talking about this regular season. Because it's tough. Like, Tyler Glasnow is going to be exciting. And there still be more like Rasmussen and Chain starts. But I'm just mostly just like, just stay healthy. And let's get to September.
Okay, real quick before we go to break. Do you make the same trade with the Dodgers? Considering health.
No,
I think I'm a no too. I'm Dustin if May. Bueller's, if back,
Bueller's alive, if Bueller's still pitching, yes.
Oh, Bueller! I think if Bueller's there, that's a automatic yes.
But without Bueller, as much as Kershaw, as much as Urias, and as much as Dustin May are really, really good, I think I still go.
My Tyler Glasnow role.
Like, I have to Dustin throw Craig Kimbrell at some point.
Yeah.
That's a big roll of the dice.
But Dustin May could be near that top tier list, like if he ever gets healthy.
Soon.
So I think like he's got lower back tightness. So it sounds like he could pitch in the postseason. I don't know. I think about that trade with the Dodgers. I think ultimately the only one I would seriously entertain is probably Houston. Like, I think I would take that, but
I would do the Mets and just be like Max and DeGrom. DeGrom's a free agent, so like whatever. Just
that's go, like a go for nuts. It move.
Finish okay, the arm.
Well, yeah. I guess that's a good question. Are you trading for their contracts as well, or is it like a rental? Like they go back in the
it would. Postseason? I think it would be like 1 year. Yeah, I think
would, it's that, just would like, that change your like thinking anyway year. On any of the trades?
No, it's still I'm still thinking just for the postseason okay. And. Oddly enough, I would more close to taking Houston's deal than the Mets, even though the Mets have the two best pitchers that are going to go to the postseason.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about the rest of that pitching staff and bullpen. They have good pitchers, but
I feel like on the pitching staff trade deadline that we've just set for Tuesday, September or Wednesday, September 28th, I don't think I would call the Mets. But if they called me with that offer, I'd be like, oh, it's harder to turn down than it is to like present the deal. Like,
yeah. I don't think I'd have the guts to ask for Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom. Yeah.
But if someone puts the thought in my head, I'm like, huh, that would be something. The vibes would be different going into the postseason if we had DeGrom and Scherzer.
There's always that thing going into the postseason. If you have like two guys like that, where you can be like in a 5-game series or a 7-game series.
Yeah.
The majority of the games that you're going to have to face are going to be against these two elite guys. So yeah. You have to win one of them. That's what kind of happened in the World Series. It was like, you have to beat Kershaw. You have to beat Bueller. You have to win one of those games. You're going to face them four times. If you don't beat them, you have to win all the others. And you have to beat the one of those two once.
Right.
That's the tricky thing. So anybody that's going against the Mets, and it's happened many times in the postseason that the two-headed juggernaut has failed, but that's still the probably too tempting to not pass up.
Definitely, for sure. We're gonna go ahead and take another quick break, and on the other side, I want to talk a little Apple TV. And we're back on Raise Your Voice after spending the last 20 or so minutes talking House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones and all that fun stuff. But in other television news, we do want to raise our voices a little bit about Aaron Judge's chase for the American League home run record, the Yankees franchise record, 61, and all of the television companies and rights owners to these games all fighting over who gets to air the record tying home run, which he still hasn't hit. So Darby, why don't you raise your voice a little bit?
I'm so sick of the discourse, Brett. I'm so sick of the discourse. First of all, I want to apologize to everybody listening to this podcast and not watching it on Yes Network, which is honestly a fundamental right as an American that you should be consuming all media on Yes Network, because that is the only true way to consume media and proper way. Things have gone insane with the Judge. Here's the thing I feel really bad for. Aaron Judge is an awesome player. He seems like a great guy. I can't wait to see him get a ton of money from somewhere. Hopefully not the Yankees. That'd be really fun. And I hope he gets the record too. Like he's like a fantastic player. Everybody in like baseball seems to love the guy. So, you know, like off the field, like he's like a cool dude. And it's great, but the problem is the Judge discourse has swallowed everything to the point where this week he's on an Apple TV Plus game broadcast, right? And people are losing their minds. Some with some very funny jokes about the Apple TV, you know, broadcasters potentially being more interested in like kind of podcasting during a game. Eh, some funny jokes. That's funny.
Which is definitely a directive they're getting from their bosses.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to do a different type of broadcast, and fine. The broadcasts always look fantastic. They are less compressed than TV broadcasts, so they look great. They look very, very high quality, so that's always nice. And we got some good highlights in very high quality of Albert Pujols hitting his 700th home run, which, funny enough, it was an amazing call. But yeah, we get to this point where we are worried about the Judge game being on Apple TV Plus. We're worried that Michael Kay will not get to call it. So they're like, will Apple spend money to pay for Michael Kay to broadcast this? Like, why? People were upset that Apple TV didn't give away their broadcast to like ESPN or MLB.
This is the
point of buying this.
This is their first sports rights deal. Like, they're trying to get into soccer, into basketball, into hockey, and like they've been doing MLB this year. They're not going to give away their most valuable
product. Why would you give away the game that's like important? Like, yeah. This is like finally a game that like, and should they have marketed it better? Maybe, but like viral marketing was basically, I knew that there was a must-watch game on Apple TV because literally everybody.
This was Tim Cook's plan all along.
That's some perfect branding right there, because literally everyone was shouting it from the rooftops that the time and channel for this. And you had probably an intern in the AG's office of New York, but Letitia James's Twitter basically saying how it was like a violation of rights to basically put this on a paid platform. Guess what? This is a free platform. This was free. In fact, if anything, this was a more free and widely accessible broadcast than any of the other MLB TV. You don't have to pay. You have to pay for MLB TV. You have to pay for cable and the Yes Network. You have to pay for cable for ESPN, Sunday Night Baseball. Apple TV is on the browser, on the the laptop that you are writing your snarky tweet about, guess what? You can just click on over to an open tab, type in Apple TV, and just remember your Apple login that you have.
Make a new one.
You know you have. Or just make a new one. Use a burner Hotmail account like civilized people do for all of their just one-time logins. It's so exhausting how people were basically making it seem like it was impossible to watch this.
And then crypting paywall.
And it was like, this is so accessible. Now, yes, Apple TV is not available as an app on Android devices, but you can still
on mobile phones.
On mobile phones. But it's fine, guys. It's fine. And yes, I also have plenty of Twitter accounts and folks that I follow that I really like who have long, very properly decried baseball's inability to find new markets and to not just be this niche product for the old dyed-in-the-wool
white
hardcore fan, white male, just the two of us, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop marketing to the two of us.
We're already locked in. Yeah, we're good.
You got our money, Rob. You got us. You don't need to. We honestly don't cater to us anymore, and don't cater to like our older parents who are also already in. They already are locked in. They are the ones that already are watching cable. Okay, this one is a broadcast in really good quality on a platform that actually has some really cool, like Emmy nominated shows.
Yeah. You get a free trial
for free
and baseball's free. Yeah.
This was the opportunity to get people that aren't dyed in the wool sports fans to be like, huh, a home run record. That's kind of cool. Well, let's check this. Apple has like baseball. Let's check it out. I'm not subscribed to MLB TV. I'm not paying money there. I'm not paying cable because I'm a cord cutter and I only am watching on Hulu and Netflix and blah, blah, blah. This is a great opportunity to get people that aren't dyed in the wool. It's also, guess what? I'm expanding this out. YouTube is even better. I know the broadcast sucks. I hate it too. But guess what? It's so easy. Everybody has YouTube. Everybody's clicking on the YouTube.
And both
their apps. And then you can watch baseball.
Like YouTube's app works so well on mobile phone, so well on a tablet.
So well.
So well on a smart TV because that's what they do. They stream video. It's not the Sinclair Broadcast Group creating a Bally Sports app, which sucks because that's not what they're good at. YouTube is like the king of stream. I also like it to have it like on at work. Like it's just easier to pull up YouTube.com. You don't need a login. You just click a button and there it is. Free baseball.
It is something your IT will not be like, what the heck are you doing? Like you can't log on to MLB TV on your work browser because that would be clearly watching sports, but YouTube, I don't know, maybe you're watching a tutorial on how to make a pivot table. I don't know. They don't know either. They might be watching it too. Actually, they probably know, but they don't care. And they, because they can justify it to their bosses. It's absurd the level of vitriol we got. And to like straight vitriol, like it went beyond memeing to the point of people just like losing their minds over the fact that like this game would not be broadcast on the normal channels. But guess what?
It's not new. It's been happening all season.
It's not new.
This game was on the schedule for a long time. There are other networks that carry Yankees games, hint, hint, like the one 2 days later when ESPN had it on Sunday Night Baseball. And again, I know part of it, the most valid gripe is that Apple wasn't also going to allow live look-ins. I get why Apple wouldn't do that, but I think on, if it's ever on Fox, National, MLB, and ESPN, I think have access to do live
look-ins. I believe they do. Yeah. Moments.
So I understand that gripe of like, you want everybody not cutting into college football, like some people were upset with on Saturday, but you want to give people the opportunity to watch this home run, even if they're not watching the game.
And I'm not going to be a total shill for Apple here. Because I'm not being paid by them. If they do want a full shill, then they can pay me. And I would be glad to. My morals will go right out the window. Come on, Tim Cook, give me some money. Come on, Tim Apple. but no, I...
Hey, do they want to sponsor D-Race Bay, maybe?
Come on. Yeah. Now, you bring up some great points, Brett. Like there is some things where this has come to the cold capitalistic end point. But the level of moralism around baseball always makes my eyes roll. And when it comes around trying to shame corporations moralistically, it's just like, why are we wasting our breath? But then it did become a very fun thing that the next day on Saturday, all these college football fans, which amass even larger numbers than baseball fans, are like enraged by the idea that in the middle of their games, we're having to watch Aaron Judge. They're like, who is this? What is happening? Get back to Alabama. What is happening right now? It's very funny. We've gotten to this point, and it's all kind of part of this big narrative where this home run race, which is important. I think 61 is an important number in baseball. It has gotten to this weird level where it's like the most important home run number in baseball, to the point of widely just ignoring the fact that we saw Barry Bonds hit 73. We saw Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa hit over 60. We can acknowledge that this is an achievement. We can acknowledge the Roger Maris family. We can acknowledge the great moment for both a team history and for American League, but we can do it in such a way that it feels like Yankee fans can only really accomplish, which is this level of agreement, this personal, we matter more than whatever you want or like, to the level where we all have to care, not just about this, but more than anything about this. And I just don't care as much as Yankee fans, and I'm never going to care as much as Yankee fans, and you can't make me. You'll never make me. Just enjoy it. Why do you have to make everything be not just about you, but make everybody bend the knee to the idea that we all have to just care deeply? And if you're angry that Michael Kay isn't broadcasting this, everybody else has to be equally furious.
I did watch a historic home run on Apple TV that night. It wasn't Aaron Judge's 61st home run. It was Albert Pujols' 700th home run. Some might argue a more impressive achievement. 60 has been done a few times. Guys have gotten 70. Only three other baseball players had reached 700, and they're, you know, arguably the three best hitters of all time. So to see Albert Pujols join that 700 club, he went into the game with 698. And honestly, I was thinking with 2 weeks left in the season that he might not get to that 700, but he got them both on Sunday night on Apple TV Plus. There was no hoopla from anybody because nobody expected him to come into that game and hit two home runs. But the moment was on Apple TV Plus. I was able to see it. I was able to enjoy it. I was watching on my dad's Samsung Smart TV, where it was still incredibly easy to access Apple TV Plus, and watched it. And it was awesome. And it was a great call. The Apple production team did an amazing job. And that's their own production team because they're the only network broadcasting this game. And I really enjoyed it. I thought the play-by-play person, I don't know who it was, but I thought he did an incredible job. And thank you, Tim Cook, for letting me watch Albert Pujols' 700th home run.
And we got some great great footage from the field from our own Trisha Whitaker, who was there.
Of course, yes.
Broadcasting, which
did
was
great. Did she do an interview with him?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Trisha was there. She got to do the interview. She got to record from the dugout, see the celebration.
The only TV interview from the game.
It's fantastic. Like, what a great moment. And what an awesome moment in that situation, though, because he had to get two home runs. The season is winding down. 2 weeks ago, I don't think a month ago, nobody's even thinking Albert gets the 700. It's been like a pretty fun run for Albert back in St. Louis. He has gone on a unholy tear that has been so fun to watch. Just keep seeing like every night, be like, oh, Albert hit another one. Also, these home runs have been like huge.
They
like,
haven't been meatballs.
Two of them have been in Pittsburgh that like have given them the lead from being down. Like he's like winning.
He's hitting like 440 feet. Like they are bombs.
It's incredible. This is like a Fountain of Youth thing. Like it's crazy. It's like that's Albert Pujols in a Cardinals uniform. Like that's flashing me back. Like this.
David Ortiz, his last year with Boston, he was incredible.
It's kind of fun. It's really, really fun. Seeing him get 700. Also seeing him do it in LA was great. Like he was just with those teammates. Like that was a great, like LA, I feel like the Dodgers kind of helped revitalize Pujols after being lost in the desert of Anaheim and being stuck on the most miserable franchise that just sucks the life out of the greatest athletes we have in our sport, slowly decaying them into husks where all the joy leaves them. And then, so like, look at what happened with Albert Pujols. Get Shohei and Trout off of the Angels and let them become superhuman. Like, let them find the joy in the sport again. But it's great to see Albert do it in LA. The fans gave him, like, it was so fun to see, like, because the Dodgers have clinched literally everything they can possibly clinch. They're the best team in the National League. Nobody's even coming close to them. So, like, the fans get to be like, you know what? This is just great. Sorry that you had to give up the home run, but guess what? We're all going to cheer. We're all just going to celebrate this one because it's Albert. Like, you got to be there for history. And who doesn't love Pujols? He's been, like, he's been a statesman of the game. He's going out. He's retiring.
The Cardinals are going to be in the playoffs.
And we're going to see him in the playoffs, yeah. He might have a couple more in the postseason. But
he's already a two-time World Series champion. And he's got to be, I think, the guy with the next best chance of being a unanimous Hall of Fame inductee.
I don't have a good argument against him not being unanimous. Like, I don't think there is a good argument. I mean,
there's a lot of people that have good arguments to be unanimous, and their only one has ever done it. So,
well, I'm sure we're going to have somebody come up with something. It's not going to be a good argument, though.
It's going to be like, oh, he has to be older than he says. It's going to be something like that with no evidence and just kind of.
I could see somebody pulling some really bad, like, yeah. But like, here's the thing.
Albert Pujols had no legitimate PED allegations. And the prime of his career was during the steroid era still.
And he played in the field. He wasn't a DH.
Yep.
Which is a big, you know, it's a knock that some of the older writers have. But he was a first baseman for the vast majority of his career. The Angels years definitely kind of suck a little wind out of the sails. But guess what? He then goes to the Dodgers, has some nice moments. And then this final run.
That's what I'm saying. This season kind of pushes him over the edge. Like, he is not only a Hall of Famer, but one of the best ever.
700 is an elite. Like, that is the, I think that might be the number in baseball. Like, in terms of position players, because that is the best of the very, very best. Like, you think of some players that hit a lot of home runs that were great that never got to 700, because that was most of them. Yeah. But Albert did. And 699 would have been also amazing, because that's more than everybody but three. But 700 is really cool.
Yeah.
Perfect number.
If you just choose to acknowledge his San Diego years, which are, so there's 12 seasons with the Cardinals, 326 batting average, 417 on base, 613 slugging, 466 career home runs, OPS plus, because I'm looking at Baseball Reference right now, a 169 WRC or OPS plus in his 12 seasons with the Cardinals. That's a Hall of Fame resume. He could have played 12 years and that's it for his career, and that's a Hall of Fame resume. And not all the years in Anaheim were awful. None of them were really very good, but he did have a 40 home run season in there. Like, he is no good argument for him to not be unanimous.
It's obviously one of the other people in the 700 club, Barry Bonds, is not in the Hall of Fame due to a lot of reasons, I guess, but, you know, should be. Hank Aaron somehow wasn't unanimous. Babe Ruth.
Racism, probably.
Well, yeah. I think when we, a lot of with baseball, it's like, somehow it's like, oh yeah, that one. That, yeah, it's that again. Our old nemesis. And then Babe Ruth, you have. Yeah,
like, who was voting against Lou Gehrig? Like, who? Like, Babe Ruth, you'd be like, okay, there might be some character flaws. Ty Cobb
burning his poor wife Helen.
Yeah, exactly. Lot, you know, Lou Gehrig. I thought everybody just liked Lou Gehrig.
Like, somebody probably made like, oh, his career length could have been better, and then being like, come on, Jesus Christ, man, what are you doing? Like, if you only had like one or two more years, if you know, I don't know. Ted Williams, somebody was like, nah.
Yeah, American hero, like war hero.
Splendid Splinter. What happened between the years of 1942 and 1945, huh?
I was fighting Nazis.
Don't see any stats. Oh, yeah. He was kicking Nazis' ass. It's like, it is kind of incredible that the level of non... you almost want to be in the club that doesn't get, like, yeah. unanimous because, wow.
Yeah, like, wow. Mariana gets it. It's like, what does this even mean? Like, Mariana, you're great, but, like, you're not the best baseball player ever.
Ken Griffey Jr., just, yeah, only if you could be a little bit more charismatic and maybe impact, you know, the youth more of the of an entire generation of baseball. Jackie Robinson, why didn't you steal two home plate? Like, why didn't you steal home twice? Like, what, just once? Come on. It's, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pujols should be unanimous. He was incredible. Even still, it's a first ballot Hall of Fame. And this moment, this lag, kind of to end on a high. We talk about vibes a lot in this episode. This ending run for Albert Pujols is just pure great vibes. Yeah. It's just so great because it's like we grew up watching this guy be one of the best that right. ever played. And even with somebody like Ichiro, who is like one of my absolute favorite players to watch, he ends, you know, with some kind of down years, still showing some nice flaw, like, you know, some excitement, but like it doesn't end exciting. Pujols is back in the Cardinals uniform and he is had a fun chase and he hit 700 home runs. That is what an amazing cap right now, because there could be some playoff magic, but like what an amazing last run for Pujols to remind us of what a legendary player he is.
I almost kind of wish the Cardinals like weren't going to the playoffs, like, and that was it, like that was you know, the end of what's the Bernie Mac movie we watched for Who's on Worst?
Mr. 3000.
Like, that's just kind of it, the end of the road, go off the hero, even though he didn't actually get it. But yeah, I think it's been the happiest I've been like watching a baseball game in a long, long time, like probably just a couple months. But still, like, it's been, like we said, the vibes are bad. It was a happy, joyful moment. And you can watch it live on Apple TV Plus. Apple, hit us up if you want to sponsor. We're big fans. Although those are the last games of the season on Apple TV, so we'll run it back next year. I think that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. We kind of just raised our voices the entire time. There was lots of stuff to discuss, lots of opinions to be had, and ultimately a fun episode. Darby, thanks for hopping on.
Absolutely. I loved it. Always available for a good rant.
Yes, oh, definitely. It's definitely been needed when the vibes are bad. So thank you guys for listening. As always, make sure to head on over to draysbay.com for all the great Rays coverage. If you want every episode of all the podcasts we do on the D-Rays Bay Podcast Network, make sure to subscribe or follow on your preferred podcast platform. If your platform allows it, leaving a rating and review is the best way to spread what we do to more and more Rays fans. Once again, thank you guys for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.